Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm, the first cheesemaking co-op in Vermont. For more information, visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your hosts for the show on all things fermentable on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're live every Monday evening at 7 p.m. Archived on the station, HeritageRadioNetwork.org, as well as iTunes.
That's right. And we have a couple announcements before we dive into things. We are hosting a small little fermented beverage competition in partnership with Divine Chocolate. We're going to call it Choctoberfest. And basically, any fermented beverages are welcome to enter this competition. We're going to hold it at Jimmy's Number 43 on October 26th here in New York City. And for more information and to register, we will have all the information up by the end of tomorrow on fermentaboutit.com.
Yep. And if you have any questions at any time, feel free to email us at fermentaboutit@gmail.com.
That's right. And subsequently from that, we'll have a giant episode talking about brewing with chocolate and cocoa and all fermented beverages.
Absolutely. And this is all going to culminate in a tasting and competition on Saturday, October 26th, correct?
Yes. So it's open to all. Yep. If you want to come taste and help judge, there'll be a people's choice as well as we'll have a nice panel of judges kind of dealing with things. What else going on, Mary?
Well, we're looking for all fermented beverages. So it could be alcoholic, like beer, wine, or cider, or mead, or it could be a non-alcoholic fermented beverage, such as a water kefir or milk kefir or anything. Anything fermented and drinkable is game.
That's right.
So more information on our site, as Chris mentioned. All right, the other announcement is on Sunday, September 15th. That's this Sunday, September 15th, at 61 Local Cafe and Public House in Brooklyn. Angela Davis is giving a lacto-fermentation basics class. And it's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. You can go online to just Google 61 Local Fermentation Class. You'll find the link. It's $35 a person. And we've had Angela on our show before. She's an excellent instructor and speak very well spoken. And I think this would be a good way to get into basics of lacto-fermentation if you're interested.
That's right. And I had the distinct pleasure of joining Ira Flatow on National Public Radio the other day, and it was really awesome. If you guys want to check out what it was a segment. It was on Science Friday. It was on August 30th for a segment that they're starting up called Food Failures, and hopefully I help people prevent failing at home brewing. Check it out. Please let me know how you think I did. I had a lot of fun. It was really remarkable, and I'm honored to have done it. It was totally fun. But today...
Well, yesterday, first of all, Chris and I had the privilege of judging Brooklyn Wort. And the winner was Simon Tepes with a red, like hoppy red ale.
Hoppy red IPA, yep.
Yep, it was delicious. Actually, we tasted a lot of really delicious beers yesterday. So
including
congratulations.
Watermelon Berliner Weiss, which I thought was notably good.
Brett Taylor.
The third place winner, she had only been brewing 5 times. This is her 5th batch, and it was beautiful. It was a honey old ale, and was a really neat woman. She's going to come on the show. She actually worked on a dry ship and made her own Kahlua and things based on what she had on board on the trip. I'm very excited to hear a lot more about that.
Yeah, so we're going to try to put together a Brooklyn Wort show with some of the winners or the runner-ups or people that participated, because Brooklyn Wort is an excellent competition of local homebrewers. There were 30 homebrewers that were served yesterday. You can buy a ticket and go as public. I think they hold it, I don't know if they're holding it once or twice a year, but it's definitely worth going to. It was a ton of fun.
Yep.
And some amazing beverages.
That's right, from great homebrewers who some of them have breweries in planning, and we'll be seeing a lot more from them in a commercial scale. Speaking of that, today we are sharing some interviews that we took at Belgium Cup of Cooperstown. This episode is called Oma Gangsters and Hooch. So the first segment is going to call upon these interviews that we did speaking to Justin Forsyth, Scott Veltman, and Tony Cordova, who are all Oma Gangsters. They're the brewers up at Oma Gang, and I'm just going to dive right into this.
Absolutely. We had a lot of fun talking to these guys. They're great guys, super enthusiastic, and Oma Gang, of course, makes amazing beers.
Yep, where they came from is home brewers, and where they are now. Here we go.
Hey, this is Mary Izette and
Chris Kuzmi
of The Man About It on heritageradionetwork.org. We are here at Belgian Comes to Cooperstown at Brewery Oma Gang in Cooperstown, New York, 2013. And we are joined by a couple people from Brewery Oma Gang. So introduce yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Justin Forsyth. I'm one of the brewers here.
I'm Scott Veltman. I'm also one of the brewers as well.
And I'm Tony Cordova, and I'm also a brewer.
Awesome. And now, which of you guys came from homebrewing? Did all of you? Some of you?
Three of us, yeah.
All of you?
I started as a homebrewer and fell in love with the passion. You know, you brew some beer, you're like, oh, that's a great product, and you go to a larger scale, and you're like, maybe I could do that again, and it kind of goes on and on. It's amazing.
So what was your particular path to homebrewing?
When I turned 21, my parents have a house down in Lewis, Delaware, and they brought me to the Rehoboth Dogfish Head. So the first craft beer I had, at that point I was drinking a lot of Yingling, but I was I got into a 90-minute IPA, and I was like, that's fucking tasty. Nice part.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's
fucking awesome. And so I got home, and I told my buddy, I was like, we got to try all these beers, because we had a beer store right down the road from us. I had 7,200 different beers. So we're like, all right, we're going to go in there, check it out. Kept trying all these beers. We're like, oh, you know what? If they can make good beer, chances are we can make good beer. And if you make bad beer, hey, you can always make good beer.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much where it all started for me, with a brown ale called Bobby Brown Ale. That was my first brew.
Nice.
It was, some of the brewing liquor was sap from a sugar maple right outside my parents' house, which was really cool. And they were up in Albany, so.
How did you use the sap?
What's that?
How did you use the sap?
I pretty much did like a 50% water, 50% sap ratio, because I only had one tap and it took a while to tap that tray.
How did it turn out?
Delicious. It was the best homebrew I ever did. It was the first one I did.
Nice.
And it was an extract batch.
Extract's fun.
Fermented Briz. Yeah, I finished out like 10.08 or something like that. It's only like 6.8%.
How long have you been here?
I've been here for about 3.5 years.
How about you, Justin?
2 years. Just about now, yeah.
It's been fun. I've been here for 7 months.
7 months?
Wow.
So you're the most senior in the group. Where are
you coming from a homebrew background as well, or what brought you here to homebrew?
Yeah, I was homebrewing for probably 10 years. I had been in a craft beer since before I was even 21. I had a really good store in my town. And then just got a kit for Christmas one year and started homebrewing, and like Scott, things turned out pretty well from the get-go, and had a whole different career, didn't enjoy it too much, and kind of made the change to professional brewing, and it's pretty sweet.
Cool.
So you went from 5 gallons to, how big is the system here?
50 barrels.
50 barrels. I mean, 5 gallons to 50 barrels. No,
like that, yeah. No in between.
Pretty,
go big
fire.
Or go home, pretty
yeah,
much.
Exactly.
So do you guys have a pilot system that you also do
yep.
here?
Yep.
Sure. And
do.
How big is that? Okay, cool.
Made by Psycho Brew.
And around this time, we asked what it was like to create on this, and Mike Manis is mostly creating, but they have their fun.
I think now we're releasing about 8 specialties
yep.
a year or something
eight
like that. Some are pretty small
new
batch.
Specialties or some are repeat? But...
Correct,
yeah.
Yeah.
And some are very small batch, so you won't really get them too far outside this region. Some we only keg.
Yeah.
Some like the Game of Thrones we're brewing more and more of because they've been so popular.
So what's one of the favorite beers that you guys are brewing right now for you, and why?
I thought Florida Hooblon was awesome.
Hooblon
it was a labor of love, man. That was the first time
Bravo.
Using... Yes, well, was it All Bravo or it had something else?
Cascade, I believe.
Yeah.
Cascade and then Whole Cone.
But it was
Bravo.
The first time, yeah, ever using Whole Cone hops in this brew house.
Okay. Oh, so talk about, yeah, what's the experience with that?
Your hands get
be
really
honest,
sticky.
Be honest.
No, it's a labor of love. Like,
your
the first day
right.
doing it was kind of fun, and then... doing it again and again, it's tired. It just takes time to weigh out all those hops.
Yeah.
You know, but it's fun.
Like, you know, 6 boxes of hops when normally it'd be half a box of hops or something. So, but it's
yeah.
still like it's kind of cool to feel the whole cones in your hand and like you know just see them and smell them, and it's just very very fragrant.
Yeah. Now, were you guys using? Was it 100% whole cone hops?
Nope. Yeah.
Nope.
Some pellets.
Some pellets.
Whole
okay.
cone. We dry hopped it
yeah.
with Bravo pellets. Anything we dry hop here, I get excited about.
Exactly.
I'm a hophead.
What, how about you? What's your favorite beer?
I like BPA. I'm a BPA guy.
And why?
Because it's clean. It's got a nice little balance of maltiness, hop flavor, a little bit of bitterness. But the aroma, when we dry hop that beer, it's so good.
How about some tips for somebody that's inspired by BPA and would like to make something like it at home?
Don't go too crazy. You know,
in what way?
Don't throw
IBUs,
yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah,
you keep it low.
Yeah, keep it low. Keep it low. Make sure you have a nice base for the beer itself. So that way it's not gonna be 100% all malt and it's like a little bit of, or like sharp bitterness and no flavor.
Right.
So if I had to say anything, I would say late additions in the kettle would definitely work out because you still get a little bit of bitterness but you get more flavor and aroma. First, when it goes up to your mouth, you smell it,
yeah.
And then
hits
you.
And how about for hop recommendations for people, maybe homebrewers that haven't done, or brewers period, that haven't done a Belgian pale ale? Do you guys have some recommendations? Or
yeah, I mean, noble hops are great to start with if you want to keep it more traditional, mm-hmm. in Belgian style. Saaz, Steering Goldings, Hallertau. But you can also mix in some Cascades and some yeah. American varieties and try to have fun with it that way. So
you get maybe more depth in the hop aroma.
Yeah, if you blend hops, definitely. And you don't want to go too nuts.
Yeah, you don't want to do
Sometimes
that.
You can get it too muddled if you use too many different varieties. But
yeah, yeah.
Just try to find a balance, maybe two or three different hops. And,
yeah. The first one won't turn out awesome, you know that. You're going to have to dump it.
Though, like yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm Scott Veltman.
And how about you? What's your favorite beer?
I really enjoy Bear Voss. It's one of my favorites, and it's just really well balanced, and the malt characteristics are really complex, and that's why I like it.
Awesome. And what about recommendations for home brewers or brewers that are?
So you've been here 7 months. Do you still homebrew?
I haven't in a very long time, yeah. But just mainly because I don't have the equipment right now. But yeah, I would love to keep doing it. I mean, even extract is fun and interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, use a really good base malt and. Just keep it simple. Like that's a lot of homebrewers like to make it overly complicated, the best beer in the world is usually like a great pilsner, or, you know, a great IPA. It's just cut and dry, smash like a single malt, single hop beers are amazing, and
yep.
You know, it's just really cool to see people do really good things with very simple recipes.
I agree. How about yeast tips for working with?
It's all Belgian.
Any tips on Belgian? So with Belgian yeast, you really want the Belgian yeast to shine. They have characters. They kind of do the things, which is why I think definitely low IBUs is an important thing for Belgian pale ales, and really like McDance's and does its thing. It gives it the opportunity to really be there. Are there any things that you do? Like, what do you ferment at? Temperature-wise, generally with the Belgian yeast strains,
it's pretty warm.
Yeah, it's pretty warm, right? About 24 to 25 degrees Celsius. Let that sit there for about 4 or 5 days, and then we'll crash it to about 0 or -2 or even 2 degrees Celsius. So that way, just everything drops out. Because that yeast strain that we have is highly flocculent, and it's really nice because we can just reuse yeast over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's
But I would like pay attention to your aeration. I mean, you can these yeasts, you can really play with the flavor profile of it by underpitching, overpitching, temperature, aeration. So you can get a lot of different esters and phenols out of it. And if you have a goal in mind, maybe you want some banana characteristic, like you can finagle the yeast to produce that. Maybe you don't want it, so, you know, ferment it at a different temperature.
Yeah, just any Belgian style yeast is very versatile.
Gives off the nice Uncle Fester's esters, as I like to say. Nice and spicy. It's delicious.
Really fun. Uncle Fester's esters, he said. They use one yeast. They change their temperatures. They manipulate the yeast in order to get all these different beers. They make amazing Belgian beers, they use all one yeast. However, Scott Veltman went off to make a beer specifically for BCTC and hang out with us and just for the campgrounds. This is what he has to say about that.
Hi.
I'm a gangster.
Scott I'm back Veltman. Here with Scott Veltman, and he's telling me about a grisette that you just brewed pilot system. So tell me a little bit about that.
We didn't do a beer for BCTC this year, and I wanted to have something for fellow brewers to try, and enjoy on hot days because every BCTC is really hot, such as last year. Let's see. Yeah, it's just it was just 75% pills, 25% white wheat. It was a single hop beer with sriracha for a full barrel. It was 20 grams for 60 minutes, 20 at 20, and then 91 at Whirlpool, so I didn't have to dry hop it. Got the yeast from a bottle of Arthur from Hill Farmstead up in Greensboro Bend, Vermont, one of the finest farmhouse breweries I've ever been to. So I looked at it under the microscope. I grew up a liter of slurry and had some Saccharomyces, Brett, lacto, so I knew it was going to be sour, and I think sours are perfect for this time of the year. And let it ferment for about 3 months. 3 months in the corner of the brewery, all capped up, and then moved it to our hop cooler.
What was the temperature?
It was room temperature, probably like 75, 78-ish. Then after that time, I moved it over to our hop freezer, which is 34 degrees Fahrenheit. Let that sit in there for a month, and then finally just racked it off 2 days before the festival. And we had a 1.5 sixthels. One sixthel went gone probably about an hour into it, between 10, 12 people.
Awesome.
It was very, very sessionable.
Well, we look forward to trying it.
Yeah,
so,
I
and that's great
partial.
Inspiration for people to make a grisette at home. So thank you so much.
Not a problem.
Subsequently, we did try it, and it was freaking delicious.
Yep.
And BCTC, you know, look out for it next year. It's a really great time. The brewers love it, and this is what they had to say about that.
And from around New York State and beyond, they're all here. And I don't know, I probably said hi to about 400 people in the past 24 hours. And it's really nice because I don't see these people a lot, and then when I do, I see them, we hang out, we have a good time. And we know how to party. We're Roma Gang.
Awesome.
We're Roma Gangsters.
Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm.
Spanning the rolling hills of Vermont's Champlain Valley and easternmost Washington County, New York, 300-acre Consider Bardwell Farm was the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont, founded in 1864 by Consider Stebbins Bardwell himself. Rotational grazing on pesticide-free and fertilizer-free pastures produces the sweetest milk and the tastiest cheese. All of their cheeses are aged on the farm in their extensive system of caves.
Consider Bardwell Farm is also a big supporter of Heritage Foods USA's No Goat Left Behind program. No Goat Left Behind is a serious effort launched in 2011 by Heritage Foods USA, designed to introduce goat meat to American diners and provide a sustainable end market for dairy animals.
For more information, please visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
Welcome back
to Ferment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Thanks again to everybody at Oma Gang, and we actually interviewed Mike McManus, one of the recipe formulators and guys out there. But we will be airing that at a later date. Very excited about that.
Yep.
But what's happening now, man?
So we are very fortunate to have Scott Meyer, author of the new book Hooch, Simplified Brewing, Winemaking, and Infusing It at Home, with us on the line. Are you there, Scott?
I am, and it's great to be with you guys.
Hey, Scott, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. So, go ahead.
My pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about, so you have been gardening for a long time. You've been on staff at Organic Gardening Magazine for more than 20 years. And the last ones, I think you were editor-in-chief. So what inspired you to move from gardening to creating your own fermented beverages?
Well, growing your own food is a real pleasure. And I think that people love food and drink with a story. And the best kind of story is, you know, I grew that myself. I made it myself. And I had always enjoyed that part of gardening, and I think people responded to that. And I had some experience with preserving food then, because once you grow some, you've always got way more than you need to use. And so you start thinking about, what are ways I could use this when the season's over? And I'd always made some pickles and other kinds of fermented foods, and I thought, what else you can do? You can make and preserve the great flavors of your garden in drink. And I went out to research it and discovered all kinds of amazing stories of people fermenting and creating beverages out of a wide variety of ingredients that you can grow, and wanted to learn more, and I began to meet people, talk about it, and learn and put together the book.
Awesome. Now, what is your favorite fermented beverage to make at home?
Well, I really love hard cider, and it's something I didn't know much about other than what I think a lot of people do, the bottled stuff that they call cider that's really not, you know, the commercial stuff. So once I started drinking the real hard cider, I discovered there's a real, you know, depth of flavor and complexity to the cider that you can produce, and you can grow apples pretty much anywhere in the United States. And the doing that is kind of really actually pretty simple. It seems to me a lot more forgiving than winemaking, which, of course, is also rewarding. But making cider is a lot of fun and pretty easy and can bring you a good result.
Absolutely. Now, do you have apple trees on your property?
I don't where I live right now. I grew up where some were, but I had lived in Pennsylvania, met an awful lot of farmers and farmers markets and places like that. People are selling their apples right now, actually. My goal would be to have more apple trees, to have some apple trees on my property, because the toughest kind to get are almost the most important. Those are those real, almost bitter-flavored ones, the bitter, sharp types that have a real, that add the bite to a great cider.
Mm-hmm. Now, luckily, I know at least here in New York City, we're at our green market, we can get some of those heirloom apples. They're definitely not as prevalent as some of the apples that we would associate more with eating or cooking with, but we do see them every once in a while. And I know I've been to a bunch of the markets in different areas of Pennsylvania. Same thing is true. So I think we're seeing more of that, more of people selling those type of apples. So they're definitely accessible.
Yep. It's great. More people are doing, you know, what I'm talking about, what I think we're all talking about here. This is, you know, doing stuff yourself, finding great ingredients, whether you grow them yourself or find them somewhere, and making something more of them that comes, again, with a great story. I did this. I'd love to share it with you, my friends and family.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So one thing I loved about your book is a couple things. First of all, I was really impressed with your yeast section. So your first section of this book is just explaining kind of the backstory of the basics of fermenting as far as yeast, oxygen, water. But your yeast, I thought you did an excellent job of explaining how yeast works in a very readable and understandable manner. I think that's something that a lot of brewers or winemakers or cider makers, anybody that's fermenting with yeast, has a hard time dealing with, or really, you know, feeling like they have a good grasp on. And I thought your yeast section was absolutely spectacular. And then I really love it because I've had gardens before when I've lived in houses in other parts of the country, but unfortunately Chris and I have an apartment. We don't have any backyard or roof or patio.
Things that grow in our house are by accident.
Yes. But I love being able to read about, you know, how to grow like grapes or apples or the berries or any kind of this fruit. It's really interesting to learn what it takes to grow those fruits and harvest those fruits and how you would use them in the beverage, regardless if I'm not able to grow anything right now. I still think it really adds the experience of brewing or fermenting with these items if you know something about how they came to your market.
I think it does add a lot to it, and I think almost wherever you live, you may be able to find a few little ingredients that kind of, again, make it a little more your own, and shopping at a market is a great way to start. But, like, for instance, in lots of cities, they've planted crabapple trees as ornamental trees, and the crabapples kind of fall on the ground. People don't care for them, and they add a nice flavor to a simple cider. So even if you bought the cider on some unpasteurized cider at a great country market, you could add some crabapple to that to give it a little bit of a sharper, more acidic flavor and make it kind of personalize it a little bit.
Absolutely. And I know one thing right now that we see a lot of in Brooklyn is a lot of people have fig trees in their backyards or kind of growing everywhere. So mulberry trees are also very common here in New York City. So I know there are some urban kind of fruits and vegetables that people grow a lot of and we, you know, have access to.
I think I've seen Google Maps that people have saved that have marked where you can forage for stuff in lots of different cities.
That's so very fun.
Going through the park or someplace, you might find a tree that nobody's paying attention to and be able to scoop up some stuff that you'd like to work with.
Yeah, especially crabapples. I never think about that, but I know that I have walked by a crabapple tree recently in either Brooklyn or Manhattan, and I'm definitely going to keep my eyes open for it.
Yes.
Because that's something that maybe people won't think of using otherwise, like they would figs or something.
Yeah, I think people would do is sweep them up and throw them away more than anything else. So it's great to be able to do that. And the same with mulberries. And, yeah, like you pointed out, there's lots of other plants growing around. Certainly dandelions. You can make a great wine out of dandelions, and they're everywhere.
I like that it's about brewing, winemaking, and infusing. Have you ever blended the three of those or had fun blending your brewing with the infusions you've had?
I've done lots of infusing, but no, I have to think now. I don't believe I have done all three. Making some wine and then making sangria with that.
Yeah.
Which is a great way to cover up a wine that you haven't done a great job with. It doesn't make the best sangria, but it's an easier way to get that wine down.
Now, why? You said that wine is less forgiving than cider. Why is that?
To get the balance of sugars and acids done, and grapes kind of come with the best balance of that to begin with, so you don't have to do much. But with other ingredients, things that you would grow with, that you would make wine with, it takes some practice, it seems to me, to get that balance right so that the wine comes out and isn't just taste too grassy or too much like the vegetable. You want it to get a good balance there. But cider, really, you're just starting with the cider, like I said, that you would buy at a farm stand in the fall, can yield a nice tasting cider. And by adding, again, ingredients like some heirloom apples or being able to include crab apples, the getting the nuancing isn't as hard, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your favorite yeast to use for your hard ciders?
Well, I do think the white wine ones create a nice, gives that edge crispness to it. I haven't used lots of different ones. I still, like lots of people, a relative beginner. Watching the people and talking to the people I interviewed and researched in my book, it seems that those, and even the champagne type yeast, create a good flavor that gives it, elevates it from juice with a little bit of an alcoholic bite to something that's more, a little deeper and a little more complex.
Absolutely.
You have distilling in here, too. That's exciting.
Yes, distilling is kind of surprising me when I started digging into that, how much that's going on, because, you know, it is illegal.
Yep.
Not condone.
You have the disclaimer, so you're covered.
Yes, I feel like that covers me, even if it doesn't. it's somewhat a little bit risky because you're dealing with alcohol in an open flame, but I found so many people who are caring about the quality of their food and drink who are doing it that I couldn't, you know, at least help someone who's thinking about it to share them a little bit with what's involved. And it's not hard, as long as you're paying attention to what you're doing. I mean, creating alcohol like that, and especially alcohol that strength, is fun stuff. I think starting with a simple, you know, kind of fruit brandy is the way to go if that's what you're doing. I would I'd be tempting, I guess, for someone to jump into malt liquor, whiskey, that kind of thing. But it seems like the fruit brandy type thing is the most forgiving when you're trying to distill.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use lots of fruit to do it. You can, you know, if you have a real glut of berries of some kind or grapes, then it's possible real quick to turn that into a deeply concentrated flavor. And talk about preservation. A bottle of liquor like that can last a long time, so the flavor of your homegrown or home-foraged ingredients last you a real long time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I really enjoyed, we really enjoyed reading your book. I would highly recommend this to any of our listeners who are interested in getting into fermented beverages. Even if you're a home brewer, but you want to delve into a little bit of cider making or even ginger ale, I mean, this book is chock full of information, and you've really done an excellent job explaining things step by step. I think it's really inspirational, like I said. It makes me want to start something and growing something in our apartment, or at least, you know, explore a little bit more of the local green market ingredients.
Where's the best place to get the book?
Best place to get the book is online, I think, at Amazon and in bookstores everywhere. It's also, you can contact the publisher Running Press at runningpress.com. And it's really been great talking to you guys. It's fun to talk to people, and as I started researching this book, discovered how many of us are out there who are fascinated by this practice of making your own and growing your own, and it's been inspiring to me, too.
It's an awesome movement right now.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Scott, thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It, everybody. See you next week.
Next week, we're going to be, Chris and I will be in Mexico, but we have a great interview with Brian Taylor, head cellar master at Goose Island. He drops a lot of knowledge, and is just a absolutely well-spoken, easygoing good guy. So we will be playing that in our absence, and we'll be back live in 2 weeks.
Ferment About It over here.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. So